All right. Just before we even get started, I just want to encourage anybody that wants to cast a vote on whether these be audio-only webinars or if we want to shift to video. We're neck and neck, and if you haven't expressed your opinion, please do so if it matters to you. Second thing I want to say logistically is that we have questions submitted from Nancy, from David, and from Jaquetta. And at this point, I don't think any of you are on the call, so we're going to do what we can in terms of exploring your questions, and I'm going to put other people in the hot seat instead of you. But what's becoming clear is that based on your questions, tonight's topic is, you guessed it, fear. So we're going to be exploring fear in its many different forms. We've been engaged in a conversation about Enneagram types, specifically Enneagram type 3s, so that's been interesting. Do you guys have anything else you want to say about that?
I don't.
I think it's potentially very helpful to understand that I am a 3 and I'm just scratching the surface, so it's cool.
It's important for anybody to understand what their Enneagram type is, because then you have a basic blueprint for why you are the way you are. You know, you want to know what type of person you are and what not to waste your time on trying to change about you. You know, if you're a tiger, be a tiger. If you're a lamb, be a lamb. Like, if you're a lamb, you shouldn't be trying to be a tiger. You know, if you're a tiger, you shouldn't be trying to be a lamb. A lot of people criticize the Enneagram because it's very negative-based. Like, Myers-Briggs is supposed to be very positive, you know, talking about your positive attributes. But the Enneagram actually kind of, they try to disguise it, but it centers around your negative attributes. But I find that these things tend to be very helpful to realize, because then if you are acting a certain way, then it just explains it, and it kind of takes some of the relief off of your shoulders or the burden off of you into thinking that you're supposed to be anything different than who you are. So I like it for that reason, and especially because I'm in the business of helping people own their shadow or own their shit, as it were. I find the Enneagram to be extremely helpful. So anybody that's on this call that doesn't know your Enneagram type, send me an email and I'll give you instructions on how to figure out what yours is so that you know what to work on and what not to work on. Any questions about Enneagram type?
Okay. Hi, Christian. It's Bob. Can you hear me?
Hi, Bob. Yes.
Hey. I still, the Enneagram, there's that sense of recognition is pretty powerful. But there's still part of me that just wants to struggle with that, being pegged into something. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I know that a lot of people hate to be put in a box, but I don't see that the Enneagram type, I don't take it that way. And if there's a part of you that struggles with being put in a box, you know, or being labeled something, then that's a resistance pattern. You know, what if you embraced it? Then there could be some wisdom there. But some resistance to it, I see that form of resistance, much like resistance to anything, a limiting approach to life. So, I mean, if somebody were to walk up to me and say, hey, you know, instead of spending the next 30 years trying to figure out why the way you are the way you are, let me just have you read this section in this book and cut to the chase, like, I would want that. You know, I think a lot of people really want to just be free, you know, like, in the 60s and you're a hippie and free to be whoever I want to be. It doesn't really work that way, though. I mean, we're born with innate characteristics. There's the whole nature versus nurture thing. You know, we can't deny that nature and nurture both play a role in who we are, who we ultimately are. Like, I had a friend that just had a baby and they're a really calm baby, you know. I have another friend who just had a baby and it's a very hysterical baby. Like, you are born, I'm sure I was a hysterical baby, right? Like, you know, you're just born a certain way, and, you know, it just pays to know what that is so that you don't try to swim upstream of that, which can be exhausting, you know. It's basically weeds out 10 years of therapy to know this. That's my take on it.
Okay, well, that's helpful.
Yeah. Thank you. And anything else you want to ask about the Enneagram type, Bob? Do you know your type?
Five. I like to investigate.
Okay.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, you may think it's one. I thought I was a seven for years just because I love to travel and I loved adventure sports. So if you're at all questioning, you know, go look into it again. It kind of blew my mind once I realized I wasn't a seven at all. I was an eight. And that changed things for me dramatically overnight. Not in a good way at first, mind you. So, you know, nobody likes to learn their Enneagram type right off the bat. It's like, oh, no, really? So that's my warning to you.
The ball and chain, huh?
Oh, yeah. Nobody wants to be their type. So also checking in about our homework, what if? You know, what if this and then what if the opposite? Does anybody have anything to say about their homework? Any questions about it? And I'll also notice if you did the homework or not. And I always say that sometimes we're in the mood for growth and sometimes we're not in the mood for growth. Sometimes a practice resonates with you, sometimes a practice doesn't resonate with you. Just notice whether you did it or not. And that's it. That could be the insight. So, moving on, tonight's topic I mentioned is fear. And Jaquetta, I was going to start with you, and I assume you're listening to the recording afterwards. I am going to just say that we were going to have you choose between the voice of have to conform or the voice of can't be myself. Now, if there's anybody on the call that these voices strike you, then I'd love to put you in the hot seat for this on Jaquetta's behalf. So does anybody feel compelled or think that there could be some insights for you in the voice of have to conform or the voice of I can't be myself, then speak up now.
Kristen, it's Bob.
Okay.
Mine is more of, it's close. It's more of, it's that sense of I don't belong. I'm just different.
Okay. Let's do that then, because that's a good voice. I can, for me, I think that can't be myself is the one that stands out for me. Does anybody have any voice in this genre that stands out for you?
For me, I'm coming more to terms with that sense of being myself. Like it, you know, I've spent a lifetime of trying to be somebody else, and I don't care anymore. So
right.
That part's
good.
Easy.
But I don't fit in is where you struggle.
Yeah, in my, it's really that crux of you know, when I took on the financial challenge of what to do with my life, it really comes down to that question of how do I relate to humanity, and I really struggle with that. I really feel, on the one hand, I'm having better and better relationships with people, but on the other hand, I feel more and more isolated.
And what we're going to do is, Jaquetta, we're going to bookmark Have to Conform or Can't Be Myself till next week. And Bob, you're in the hot seat now. And even if the others on this call who don't resonate with, I don't fit in, I know that you know people who feel this way. And so this will give you some insights about them. And these voices exist in all of us. Even if you feel like, that's not a big one for me, you may actually have it locked in the basement. And it may not be something that you resonate with me because you are in denial of it. But these voices exist in every single one of us. So not only if you don't resonate with this voice, will this help you understand other people, it'll also help you understand yourself better. And especially if you don't resonate with this voice, I want you to play along, is what I'm saying. So Bob, with that, allow me please to speak to the voice of I don't fit in. Who am I speaking to?
I don't fit in.
So everybody, close your eyes. As long as you're not driving, and just let this the voice land. And notice if you show up in the self thoughts or if you show up just as a feeling in the body. Let's take 20 seconds of silence to just be, I don't fit in. Immediately, I'm noticing for myself that I didn't resonate with this voice, or, you know, Kristen didn't resonate with me, rather. But I'm noticing that I show up in her life in that she's always trying to be contrary or challenge existing norms. That's been her style her whole life. And so she does actually resonate with me, and she sees me as a positive thing. So speaking to Bob's version of you, I don't fit in. Does Bob see you as a positive thing or a negative thing?
He tries to see me as a negative thing, but he knows that I've always, there's just a part of me that's always been there to protect him. And it, I mean, that's what I do. I hold him apart. And it also gives him perspective on the world. To not be lost inside it, to be able to step aside and look.
So it keeps him separate and therefore protected, which is ironic because that's kind of the theme of what the questions were that I received for tonight's call, just separateness, you know, being apart as a protective mechanism to limit fear. And tell me about the second part more.
What was the second part?
You said that he wants to see you, he doesn't necessarily see you as a negative. He knows that you're part of a protective mechanism. And then the second part, I was just asking for more clarification because I'm not sure that I really followed it. It was something along the lines of, was it feeling special?
Oh, perspective. I give him perspective. He can view the world from a different place and not be caught inside it, but to be able to look with a different angle so he can step out of himself in a way, I guess.
So it's a personal, you're a personal experience. You keep him separate as a protective mechanism, but you also keep him separate so that, because Bob is really big into trying to figure out who he is. And you kind of keep him in the loop of having a interpersonal relationship with himself. Is that what you're saying?
That's an interesting way to put it. Yeah, I mean, in one sense, I am his best companion. I do kind of keep him disengaged from the world and from other people for that matter. But it's because I don't want to see him get hurt. I mean, I'm there for him. I'm someone that an underpinning of life, the cosmos, whatever, there's love there that I remind him that there's no, I guess I'm selfish in that sense. It's hard to let it go sometimes.
I see you as being tied to introverts. You know, the extroverts, I do fit in. You know, the opposite voice of you can be a very stuck place for people, too, because then they're constantly engaged in a tribe, in a group, you know, in that could become their identity, actually. Whereas I don't fit in, you can be a stuck place, but you can also be a really gorgeous place where somebody becomes independent, autonomous, have it be a very personal experience, they place like you're talking about. I mean, I the opposite of you, I do fit in, can be a stuck place or it can be a liberating place. I don't fit in, you can be a stuck place, or you can be a liberating place. Can you see that?
Nice. I got distracted here. I apologize, Christian. My wife just came in and distracted me.
I can hear her talking.
Give me this
That's
time.
That's okay.
Okay.
So every I'll say it a different way. Every voice has a great wisdom and a great delusion. And I do fit in. You know, that's a really lovely place to be in. You know, who doesn't want to fit in, especially if you're in high school? But it can also be a stuck place because then you never get to have a personal experience. You're always part of a group. You never really explore yourself as an individual. So I don't fit in. You know, I always say that there's a great wisdom and a great delusion in these voices, and it's really clear to see, you know, like the wisdom and love, but it's hard to see the delusion. Like, there's a very distinct line for certain voices. Like, we see love as 100% good. Good, 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 good. We would never see it as bad. We see fear as bad, 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 bad. We'd never see it as good, you know, except for maybe me, right? You, as the voice of I don't fit in, are kind of on the edge, but you're mostly seen as negative for people. You know, if somebody says, oh, I feel like I don't fit in, oh, we rush to fix that, you know? But for some people, especially introverts, you can actually be seen as a wise, safe, personal place, comfortable even. So you're kind of on the edge. You know, I've found a couple voices like you that are on the edge, like the voice of the competitor is on the edge. Is it good? Is it bad? Some people see it as very bad. Some people see it as very good. You're kind of more in the bad category. So it's easy to see what your delusion is and how you cause people suffering. Because ultimately, I think our true nature is we do want to have friends. We do want to fit in. We don't want to be hermits, right? So back to you as the voice of I don't fit in. Bob said something really interesting at the beginning, or you said something really interesting, is that Bob wants to see me as negative, but he doesn't, does he?
No, he doesn't. I'm his best companion. The most reliable companion, the one he doesn't have to really feel vulnerable to.
So you're in the category of stinky teddy bear. You're a comfortable place. You're familiar. And he may complain about you, like, oh, God, it stinks, right? But see what I'm driving at?
Yeah, yeah.
So does Bob have a stuck place regarding you?
I think Bob can see that I'm just a character in a story or another story, and he's reluctant to let me go. But I mean, he can always come back to me. It's not like he has to completely let go of me, but I think he forgets that.
And there's also beliefs, the voice of beliefs. And imagine if we went on that journey and how you showed up as a belief. You are a full sentence, you know, the belief of I don't fit in. And we can also start to believe our stories, you know, and cling to them. They could become a bar to a cage that keeps us locked in the same habitual patterns our whole lives, right? You will find evidence to support with beliefs, whatever it is that you believe. And if you're a strong belief in him, he will find evidence to support this all day long. It's everywhere. But if he were to shift to, I do fit in, and have that be a balanced belief, I said, does he have a stuck place with you? You know, you never want to just be stuck in one belief. You know, we want to be able to move seamlessly between opposites. He may have a stuck place with you in that he doesn't get a chance to explore, I do fit in, often enough. And he will find evidence to support that as well if he were to have a practice around the two of you that would make him more free-flowing, more balanced, more in the middle way, like I fit in sometimes and I don't fit in other times, you know, and give him more choices in his life and more beliefs and more, less bars to the cage, more options. So it's just something to be contemplating.
Yeah.
I find that people get stuck in these voices in one of two ways. Either they lock them in the basement you know, and they fight a war with that. Or they become overly identified with a voice, usually as a safety mechanism. So when I say, what is Bob's stuck place with regarding you, you know, those are some things that you contemplate. Last question. As the voice of I don't fit in, what advice do you have to give to Bob about you, the opposite of you, all that I've just outlined?
Well, just, you know, I'm just a story that Bob can tell himself. If he needs it for comfort, fine, but it's just a story. He needs to remember that. He needs to remember that there's a lot more interesting parts of the world to explore, a lot more interesting stories than to keep reading the same one over and over again.
The other thing that happens, too, is when somebody's really attached to a story, like the opposite of you, I do fit in, and all of a sudden they have an experience of not fitting in, they seek to just cling to that opposite voice with everything they've had because it becomes their identity. And it's the same thing with you. If all of a sudden Bob has an experience of fitting in, he may reject it or cling to you as well as a safety place. People can get stuck in voices that are kind of on the edge like this. So what we want to do is be free-flowing between opposites. And the last thing I'll say is I make a living helping people get unstuck from unconscious patterns that don't work for them anymore. And if we become overly identified with one belief system about who we are or where we fit in, then that is a stuck place. And my analogy that I always give is, if you wear Birkenstocks every day, you're stuck. If you wear Prada every day, you're stuck. But if you wear Birkenstocks one day and you wear Prada the next day and then back to Birkenstocks, then you're not stuck. So in finishing this section of our webinar tonight, does anybody have any comments or questions?
Is there any good Prada for the guys?
Yes, there is.
Okay, good.
That's a great question. All right, moving on. Do I have Nancy on the phone? All right, doesn't sound like I do. So I'm going to go over. She submitted a multitude of questions. And I went over three last week. I'm going to go over two tonight. So even if, Nancy, you're not on the call, she was planning on it, so she may show up midway, but I'm going to cover these two questions. And I mentioned tonight's topic is fear. So these are her two questions. And I think that people will be able to relate to this first one for sure. The second one, it won't seem like you can relate to it, but I'm going to bring it into your life as well. First one, I have a fear of aging. And not so much what I look like, that's part of it, but also fear of aches and pains and all the things that could happen to me. I will say, once I turned 50, that became really, really big in me, especially all the things that could happen to me. The second question, which is also about fear that she submitted, is I worry a lot about my kids, driving, staying healthy, having a great life, being able to handle anything thrown at them. Now, what she's done is named some really big fears that we all have. Some people, these are your bigger fears. Some people, these aren't on the top 10 list. But she talked about fear of looking old, fear of being old, fear of injury, fear of disease. She also talked about, of course, if you have kids, you know, it's a scary thing to do because you're inviting a lot more fear into your life. You know, I held a newborn that was 4 days old a couple weeks ago, and believe me, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so going to, I wouldn't know how to keep this child alive, you know, they're so fragile. So her kids are older, but fear of kids not thriving, fear of kids being harmed. Now, taking it back into everyone that's on the call, basically we're naming our biggest fears, or she did name her biggest fears. So just pay attention to what your biggest fears are. And the origination of fear is self and other. I covered this in my book. It was in the beginning of the book, if you guys remember. Basically, when you come into form as a separate egoic being at age two and you're not connected anymore to your parents, you're not them, they are not you, is the origination of the separation between self and other. And what happens is you become aware of the big wide world out there, you know, kindergarten and beyond, like, oh my gosh, I am not other people. I am not animals. I am not the weather. I am not the earth. I'm like, we are so separate from all these things. And in that separation lies the basis of fear. So we fear other people. We fear animals. We feel fear. We just had a hurricane, you know, down in Mexico at our house. We fear the weather. So that separation is the origination of fear. But if you connect to the other things, if you connect to the person, if you connect to the animal, you know, we look at videos, my husband and I, all the time of people who swim with sharks, who snuggle with tigers, who like roughhouse with bears. Like, they're all over the internet. Why are these so fascinating? Because these are the things that we fear so much, but we, to see a human connecting with them, it makes us fear them less, right? If you connect to the rainstorm, I've been out in the rain many times and I've been in resistance to it. That's one experience. But if you connect to the rain, there's going to be less fear. So that connection is the thing that limits our fear. Now, similarly, if you're not connected to these other things, or if you're not, if this is an internal experience, if you're not connected to yourself, you know, not taking it internal, then there's also fear of yourself. Fear of fear, or we're going to talk about it in a little bit, fear of stress or fear of any kind of negativity. So if you're disconnected, if you're separate from these things, more fear. If you're connected to these things, basically less fear. If you're connected to yourself, that is Zen living. You know, Zen is to become one with yourself. There's going to be less fear. So breaking it down, if you're internally fighting with something, or externally fighting with something, you are giving it power. But if you internally connect with something, internally connect with others, you know, external things, and you also internally connect with yourself, you have intimacy with it, you are actually in turn giving yourself power. So in practical terms, I want to do some voices. So the first question I have is, does anybody have any questions about what I outlined? And the second question I have is, who wants to be in the hot seat on this one?
I'll be in the hot seat.
Okay. So no questions then. I believe that was Rick. So, Rick, do you want to go through the process of fear of looking old or the fear of being old, or do you want to go through fear of injury, fear of disease? Which speaks more to you?
The injury part and just body falling apart.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of my body falling apart. Who am I speaking to?
Voice of fear of my body falling apart.
Okay. Spend a moment, 20 seconds. Notice if you're showing up in thoughts or in feeling. Notice if you're in denial, if Rick's in denial of you, if the self just kind of blanks you out. Notice if the self tries to lock you in the basement. Notice if the self is overly identified with you. Just notice that relationship. What do you see? How does Rick feel about you?
Rick's not resisting me. Acknowledging me. He has He knows that the worries that I bring up are real. He's had a lot of injuries, and they're starting to get more and more sore. And he's got to somehow maintain them, otherwise he won't be able to do a number of things that he loves to do.
It sounds like you're a good advisor.
I am a good advisor. Rick's pretty diligent with a lot of stuff, but he's not as diligent with my voice as he should be.
We could do this a couple ways. I could put you in the basement. We could have that conversation. But let's do it this way instead. So I'm going to still speak to you, but allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the fear. The voice of fear, right? But you're very pinpoint targeted on this one specific thing. You're the voice of fear of his body falling apart, immature. Who am I speaking to?
Voice of fear of his body falling apart, immature.
So you're showing up in an immature way. Tell me, how do you speak? What kind of thoughts do you have? Tell me about you and how you show up in this immature way.
When Rick gets into bed, I tell him, you didn't do your exercises. Idiot.
You call him an idiot?
I think so.
So fear of body falling apart, immature, I'm just kind of here all the time. And I'm just nagging. I'm like, you know, like a finger just scratching on the same spot all the time, just right? And I'm like this low-grade irritation all the time, like, you should have, you could have, you know, why didn't you? I show up as very negative self-talk, and I can be very persistent. Anything else you notice about how you show up as an immature fear of body falling apart?
Whenever my body is hurting, it's an opportunity for me to tell him, well, look at that, that's why that's happening. Come on. Your fault.
Right. You're very finger pointing.
Yeah.
And I was saying before that if Rick doesn't connect in an intimate way with his fear, right, you're giving it power. And I'm speaking to you in this way because you haven't really had a chance to grow up. You're immature. That tells me that you're probably locked in the basement. You're a younger version of what you should be. Like, I see fear as being a wise old soul, like an advisor voice, like the man at the top of the mountain that's giving advice, you know, that if the self is willing to climb that mountain, willing to actually go through the effort of trying to find you and talk to you and reach you, that you might have some great wisdom for him. But you're showing up in an immature way, and that's not you, right? So now let's shift, and instead of you being in the basement, a.k.a. immature, we're now going to kind of give you an apple, you know, some sunshine, put you at the top of the mountain, help you grow up and be the wise old sage that you are. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the fear of body falling apart, mature. Who am I speaking to?
Voice of body falling apart, mature.
Okay. Spend a moment. And just tell me, how do you communicate with Rick?
I help Rick devise a plan, make sure that he's going to do the things that he needs to do, and the plan's going to make it fit good points during the week and the day. If something gets in the way, then I'll help him figure out another point.
You sound very organized.
Yeah, you got to be. You got to be, because there's so much going on. Otherwise, it just falls by the wayside. Other things get in the way. And he can't walk on his ankle right now, so I need some help. He needs some help.
You sound like a, $300 an hour personal trainer.
Well, I get advice from not $300 an hour, but a few folks like that.
Right. And instead of showing up in a critical way, as a finger pointing or nagging, you're very encouraging, possibly motivating?
Yeah, it's like, hey, this is feeling better today, so good job. Let's try that out. Let's do a little more of that one. That other one's not working. Maybe that's not quite the right one. We'll ask about that. Put it on the back burner. We'll work together on it.
Okay. And whatever determines whether a voice shows up in an immature or a mature way is a person's willingness to connect with the voice or not connect with the voice. So moving on to the more external question that Nancy submitted, fear of kids being hurt. Now, Rick has kids, so we can do that. But for those who don't have kids, their kids are external, like, they're a part of Nancy, but they're not Nancy anymore. They go on to be their own being. It could be fear of your wife being hurt. Fear of the planet being hurt and not surviving this climate change thing. Just anything external that the self cares about, right? So, Rick, let me just ask you, Rick being Rick now, do you want to do fear of kids being hurt, or do you want to do fear of your wife being hurt or fear of the planet being hurt?
I don't think I probably should have some more fear about my kids and my wife being hurt, but I don't think about it too much.
Then I'm going to put Kirk on the hot seat.
All right.
Okay. Kirk, you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, Nancy, when you're listening to this later, I want you to just do the voice of the fear of kids being hurt, but with you, Kirk, because you've expressed this before, and I know that this is something that is troubling you, allow me, please, to speak the voice of fear of your wife being hurt. Who am I speaking to?
Fear of my wife being hurt.
Spend a moment. You're still the voice of fear, but you're very laser-focused on this one particular issue. And I say that because fear is the same feeling. It doesn't matter what your focus is the voice of fear. It's still the same feeling. So fear of wife being hurt, immature. Who am I speaking to?
Fear of my wife being hurt, immature.
Now, what do you say? How do you communicate?
I can be aggressive toward her, telling her what I do or what Kirk wants her to do or not do. I express myself either almost panicky or aggressive.
Or maybe manipulative.
Yeah, yes, for sure.
Yeah, panicky and maybe in an abrupt or know-it-all kind of way.
Yeah, more of a telling, aggressive, or, like I said, more of like a elevated voice, upset, almost a little panicky.
Yeah. And we see children, they they at very young age, they communicate by crying and screaming, and you know, they're upset. And then they grow up, and maybe they get trained. You know, we could possibly train you, but the point is, you're immature, and as the word suggests, then you can be very expressive in a as an adult, you know, acceptable in children, but as an adult, unacceptable way.
Mm-hmm.
So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of your wife being hurt, mature. Who am I speaking to?
Fear of my wife being hurt, mature.
Take a moment and just notice how different you are from immature. And tell me how you communicate.
Well, I still feel afraid. I still feel that knot in my stomach. But now I communicate as maybe as posing it as questions and more of a level and coming from a more level and grounded place. I may say, you know, to my wife, do you think this is the best idea? Do you think, you know, this may not work out real well for either of us, for both of us, or even just you?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm much more communicative in a reasonable way.
And can you feel the difference in your body? It's still an uncomfortable feeling, and a good horse moves at even the crack of a whip. Like when you show up, you know, you are a great advisor saying, hey, Kirk, you know, you got to say something. But can you see the difference in feeling between the two and expressing? And so,
you know,
taking it back into... Go ahead.
I didn't feel a lot. I was surprised. I didn't feel a lot different than immature. I still felt kind of that sharp twang, but I just express myself differently. I express myself in a way that I can be related to and received. Because I'm wiser. I'm not so out of control.
This practice is not about trying to get anybody to move from an immature version of a voice to a mature version of a voice, to be clear. It's just to help us recognize where we are. You know, to, I mean, in the Western world, you know, Zen has goals. Like, we'd all rather be mature versions of these voices versus immature. In the Eastern world, it's just the noticing, and that's all. It's not about trying to get rid of the immature version of a voice. So then, in going through this, you know, Rick and Kirk, what did you notice? Let's do an Eastern, you know, conversation first. What did you just notice about having gone through this, either of you?
The outcome of the mature is just, actually not the outcome, the process is far more comfortable. It's fear that's driving it, but it's more of an ally versus more of something potentially to try and ignore.
You know, I feel like as a mature, being mature, I'd be more receptive and I would accomplish more of what Kirk wants to get, to, you know, to get the point across in a better way.
Right, and by connecting with fear, you then could have an opportunity to connect with your body and wanting to take steps to take really good care of it. By connecting to fear in a mature way, then you also have a chance to connect better with your wife, a.k.a. me. And I assure everybody who's listening, I didn't do this because I was trying to beat him up or make a point or any of that. I was curious to see what would come out, because it's definitely been part of our conversation. But thank you for obliging me, Kirk. And the second part is Eastern is just noticing. Western is, how do we use what we just explored to better our lives? Like, give yourself some advice about how to connect with that mature version of that voice. And this is for you, Nancy, too. Like, how do you, this is not about getting rid of you're worrying about your kids. This is not about getting rid of your worry about aging and, you know, the aches and pains and, you know, that there's death and decay and your future disease, right? That's part of life. You know, there's a saying in Zen, you're born and then you die, and in between there's death, disease, and decay, right? Not much of a life. It is a saying in Zen, which is a funny saying in Zen, because you'd think that Zen would be a lot more positive. It's not. So how can we in the Western world take these noticing, the difference between the immature and the mature, and actually use this as a tool to try to have a more mature relationship with our fears and what that can offer us? So basically give yourself some advice. Rick, Kirk?
I think it's just being able to acknowledge which one is present. And if I'm going to bed tonight and the voice of immature fear is there, I can just acknowledge it, and it probably won't bug me as much. Still there.
And I think like you said, is acknowledge it, and then hopefully I can consciously choose, you know, to possibly move to the mature voice.
And that brings in the current kind of self-help flavor of our culture right now, where we realize we have choices, which I'm actually coming around to. As being, thinking that it's a beautiful practice. I mean, I think that there's step A and there's step B, which is A, acknowledge the negative, but B can be, you know, then choosing, and you're going to hear me talk a lot more about this as a teacher, where once we acknowledge what our uncomfortable feeling is, see it, acknowledge it, become intimate with it, then we can also use this voice dialogue, the game of shift, as a opportunity to now make a conscious choice to shift into whatever either version of the voice that we're currently in we want, or into any version of a voice that we want, period. And I do this with athletes. It's like, okay, if they're feeling fear of getting injured, you know, see it, honor it, see it, honor it. See it, honor it. That's pure Eastern Zen. Adding in a Western approach, okay, once I'm done with that, if it's still persisting, now I can replace it, making a conscious choice with whatever I want next. So let's bookmark that and know that that's going to be showing up more during these calls. Any questions or comments before we move on to our final subject? Okay. So final subject is for David. David, are you on the call? So I wanted to go back to his talk about porn addiction. And David will listen to this later. So he wants to address it, not his wife. His wife is not pushing him to address it before they get married. That's good news, because the last thing you want, David, is a marriage like my parents' marriage, right? Where my mother was absolutely intolerant of that kind of thing. So it's not that my mother wanted my dad to address it, and he was in resistance to that. David, you're the one that wants to address it. So, and this is going to tie into everybody else's life. You'll see why in a second. He wrote, "Whenever I get stressed, I run to porn. Whenever I get stressed, I run to porn." Well, let's break it down, because that sentence can be used in anyone's life. Whenever I get stressed, I run to what? You know, for me, it's comfort food. For me, it's shopping. For me, it's feeling like a victim. For me, it's blaming other people. You know, whenever I get stressed, I dot, dot, dot. So let's break it down. First of all, when we get stressed, what is stress? it took me a while to figure this out. I actually have a couple regrets about my book. One of the main ones is that I use the word stress and anxiety interchangeably in my book. And I realize now that anxiety is very specifically recirculating fear, where stress is something else. Stress to me, and let me know if you guys agree with this, because I'm still playing around with it. Like if I were to give it an equation, stress equals A plus B plus C plus D plus E plus, you know, a whole bunch of things times resistance. And those ABCs could be fear, yes, frustration, anger at my boss, worry about the future, it's a whole bunch of negative, things, A plus B plus negative plus negative plus negative times resistance. So it gets exacerbated by resistance. But for me, anxiety is just fear times resistance. So stress seems a little bit more, has a lot more flavor to it, a lot more layers to it. Does that resonate with everyone on the call? Or does anybody have any questions about that or any comments or additions to that?
I kind of liked what I may have misinterpreted, but in reading your book, the simplification, which just is fear times resistance equals anxiety. That was my takeaway. So if you just have the fear, then it can be stressful. That was my take, for me anyways. If I throw resistance in there, then it becomes anxiety.
Right. Now, here's the thing, though. Do you see anxiety as being different than stress? Stress being different than anxiety?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, stress by itself is it's boxed. It's, like, very specific. Anxiety ends up just kind of percolating over and over again.
I want everybody on the call to close your eyes if you can, find stress in your body. And I also want you to find anxiety in your body. Let's start with stress. Just close your eyes. And just notice if they're in different places, if they're different feelings. Like I feel stress, kind of the residual of stress in my head. Although that may be tired from a trip. It may be hormonal because I've cold turkeyed off of my hormones. But it doesn't feel like anxiety. Anxiety I feel in my chest. So just notice where you feel stress and where you feel anxiety. And so the stress for me is my head, and it could be because of the hormone thing. And that would be one of the A's and the B's and the C's, you know, all of that. So if you can notice the difference, if anybody can't notice the difference, let me know.
I almost feel stress is external pressure.
I agree.
I mean, obviously I'm internalizing it, but I feel like it's, a resistance and a tightness from just like, for instance, too many obligations.
Too many things on your list of things to do.
Yeah. But then I feel like it kind of can turn into anxiety, and I can focus on one thing and be anxious about something in particular. Or I can be anxious about all of them too.
So obviously this is a huge subject, and it's not something that I've spent a lot of time exploring, like the difference between stress and anxiety. But it's definitely worth exploring. And I really like your insight, Kirk, because that is very helpful for me, too. Anxiety, the fear comes from within, whereas the stress comes from external list of things to do, boss is asking for this, or person complaining about that, or, the roof needs fixing and the car's broken. It creates an internal fear, and fear is part of stress, but it's, anxiety and fear are very intimately tied, but stress also has a whole bunch of other components, not just fear, has been my experience. So I like that. Now, taking it back to David, whenever I get stressed, I run to porn. Taking it into you, whenever I get stressed, I run to whatever. There's two steps here to the second part. I run to, you run away from something. You know, I run away from the stress. And then the second part is you run towards something. So you're running away from something and you're running towards something. In his case, he's running away from the stress. Other people run away from the fear. We see that. Other people run away just maybe from frustration and run towards something. Now, it's for everybody, like I've said before, it's different what it is that you run toward. But in a nutshell, let's look at that first part, running away from stress. Now, it can be very stressful if somebody is wanting to have an intimate connection with you. You know, that person could be causing the stress, like running away from a person who's causing stress. And if the person is not causing you stress, you probably want to hide it from them. So you may be just running away from that feeling, you know, as a way to hide it from them, aka running away from others. So when I get stressed, what is stress? I run away from it. So who wants to be in the hot seat with this one?
Okay, stress me. It's Bob.
Okay. Now, if you're running away from stress, this is the same as running away from intimacy with yourself. You're running away from intimacy with other people. You're running away from intimacy with yourself in this case. If you're running away from stress, you're running away from yourself, basically. If you're stressed out, you have two choices. You can either run towards the stress and have a fear practice and an anger practice and a list of shit to do practice and, like, you know, basically use the four steps to be intimate with that stress, or you can run away from it, which is a form of resistance. You know, you can fight it, you can ignore it, or you can run away from it. So allow me, please, to speak to, and this is a two-part process, and we'll do it quick because we've kind of gone overboard on time, but I hope to stick with me for a few more minutes, everyone. Allow me, Bob, please, to speak to the voice of fear of stress. Who am I speaking to?
I am fear of stress.
So just sit and be you. Fear of yourself, fear of fear, fear of frustration, fear of anger, fear of your list of things to do, fear of stress. It's like kind of all the same thing. What does it feel like to be you?
It's a sense of overwhelm. It's like stress is just piling things on my shoulders, one more thing after one more thing. It's like I feel I can't support it. I can't hold it up.
There's also the voice of stress.
Of threat, yeah. Yeah.
No, of stress.
Okay.
You know, maybe we should have done that one first. Actually, let's go back and do that real quick. Allow me, please, and everybody go there to speak to the voice of stress. Who am I speaking to?
I am stress.
Okay. It's just be you.
I pack it on.
Yeah. And we're going to rapid fire these, so I may not do many questions. So you're the voice of stress. And now allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of stress. Who am I speaking to?
It's the voice of fear of stress.
Now, just notice how different you are than stress.
I'm enclosed. My shoulders are tight. I'm kind of hunkering down.
And I don't know. There's no right or wrong answers to this question. Are you a worse feeling for Bob than the voice of stress itself?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. It's just a feeling.
It's a different feeling.
Yeah.
Okay. Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of avoidance of stress. Who am I speaking to?
I'm avoidance of stress. Just don't bother me. Stay over there. I don't need
I'm the
this.
One who, right, I'm the one who quits her job for her. Right?
Yeah, I need another distraction.
Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the one who's intimate with stress. Who am I speaking to?
I'm the one who's intimate with stress. I know it well.
Notice how you feel. And I like doing these rapid-fire voices because if we try to understand them, we're just going to get lost and confused. But if we can just feel the different flavors of these voices, it's like when you listen to music and you don't listen to the lyrics, you just go with the kind of the flavor of the song, the how it moves you, you know. You don't need to, like if you're eating food, you don't dissect the different flavors. You just go with the whole flavor of it. So just notice the flavor of you. Intimacy with stress. So I see him running away from stress towards porn as running away from intimacy because intimacy causes him stress. So allow me, please, to speak to the voice of intimacy. Who am I speaking to?
I'm intimacy.
So notice the flavor of you.
Oh, I like a caress. I like just feeling wide open.
He likes feeling wide open. He likes you, right? So you're, let me just be clear about this. You're the voice of intimacy. Your job is not like or not like yourself. Your job is to just be the voice of intimacy. But he likes you. Bob likes feeling you, right? So you want to make sure we know who's speaking. You're the voice of intimacy. And he likes the way you do when you're around. Okay?
Got it.
Now, allow me, please, to speak to the voice of fear of intimacy. Who am I speaking to?
I'm fear of intimacy. Yeah, I mean, that's... he lets himself wide open if he doesn't listen to me. Yeah, you know, it's a dangerous world out there. I gotta take care of that guy. I gotta make him feel something.
Allow me now, please, to speak to the voice of avoidance of intimacy. Who am I speaking to?
I'm avoidance of intimacy. Yeah, I'm a real pain.
Okay. You're not a real pain. He thinks you're a real pain. Your avoidance of intimacy, do you judge yourself as being good or bad?
No, I'm just another distraction. I'm just there, what can I say?
Right. So, but Bob, or the judge judges you, a.k.a. Bob judges you, but just as much as you can, just be you. As a feeling. Now, allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the avoidance of intimacy with yourself. Who am I speaking to?
I am avoidance of intimacy with myself.
Now we're getting into the heart of what David wanted to explore. You're the avoidance of intimacy with myself. Let's just take 20 seconds to just be here in silence. And notice how you show up. I just kind of blank out. That's how I show up. How about you?
Yeah, I'm just really lack of presence. I'm just not present.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just like, yeah.
And anyone can speak now. Avoidance of intimacy with yourself. How do you show up in the self life?
I isolate myself. I distract myself.
Which is interesting. I isolate myself, and we're back to where we started, right? I don't fit in, right? And we're kind of like closing off and hiding from other people. So if you don't have intimacy with yourself, then you are not engaged in the world. Because we're going to do one more voice. That's very interesting. Anybody have anything else they want to add? And for Rick, you know, the Enneagram type 3, it's like, I don't want to be a 3, right? Avoidance of intimacy with myself. Avoidance of intimacy with being an Enneagram 3. I mean, avoidance of intimacy of being female, avoidance of intimacy with fear, avoidance of intimacy with stress. It's all in there. Avoidance of intimacy with all the 10,000 voices is the same as the avoidance of intimacy with yourself.
Yeah, this is
David,
Kirk speaking.
Go ahead.
I really noticed that as the voice of stress, I take myself away from being present. And then, because I feel overwhelmed by everything going on, right? And so then I kind of go internal. And then the fallout is I do that to myself again, like you just said. I do it with other people and then with myself.
Let's all go there, and let's all be in the hot seat. Allow me now to speak to the voice of avoidance of intimacy with others. Who am I speaking to?
Avoidance of intimacy
with others.
With others.
Just spend 20 seconds in silence. I show up as hardness, as anger, as building a wall. So this is the running away from. There's also the running towards, but we're just exploring the running away from. Anything that you notice?
Bad.
Well, the self, and notice the judgment always keeps coming up. You know, Rick, Bob, like, oh my gosh, right? Avoidance of intimacy, it's like we are here on this planet and it's said that, oh my God, you need to connect. We're all connected. We just need to connect with other people. Love is the most important thing. Like, you are seen as the worst thing ever. But notice that you're not in voice anymore. It's the voice of the judge calling you bad. And intimacy involves being intimate with the voice of you, right? Ironically. Do you follow that?
I do.
Yep.
Right? Until and unless we can become intimate with the voice of the one who avoids intimacy with others, right? We can never really even be intimate with ourselves. It's like we have to become intimate with all the 10,000 voices. So let this voice be here. And we can do the Eastern thing, just notice. Notice what it feels like to be you. Notice the role that you play in the self-life. Notice how you create a running away from situation. You know, there's the running towards, the porn in this case, but there's the running away from that first needs to be addressed. And that's you. And then we can do the Western thing Allow me, please, to speak to the voice of the self. Who am I speaking to?
The self.
By the self?
Now, to be clear, it would have been a deeper, richer experience if we could have spent more time in each one of these voices. I did rapid fire. But just from that short kind of rapid fire experience, what did you learn from that that can benefit your life?
Just these different voices, these different perspectives. I can just go there and see my life from that other angle and drop the judgment.
Hold on one second. When you say drop the judgment, what judgment are you talking about?
Okay, well, it's even not dropping, and it's just, I mean, I can listen to the voices of judgment and just hear them, but I don't have to identify with them unless I want to.
Right, unless you want to. That comes with consciousness practice. All right, Rick, you were about to say something.
Yeah, just the more often I can actually listen to the voice and accept that it's there, like listen to it, and you know, it might be telling me I'm an idiot or I won't. But if I let it tell me I'm an idiot for long enough, it just kind of actually becomes okay somehow. There's something there.
And taking it into David's life, like, can you just sit with your avoidance of intimacy with yourself, your avoidance of intimacy with your with others? And the avoidance of intimacy with yourself is your avoidance of stress in this case, right? So that's for David.
Now for me, I just really noticed that from the stress and the external factors, now for me it comes down to presence. Like if I have 20 things going on, and when one thing comes up, instead of just closing down and saying no or whatever, just being present and just take 30 seconds or whatever and just address that whatever it is as it comes up and then move on instead of just going into overwhelm. Just really presence.
Right.
It comes down to presence.
Right. And just connecting with whatever it is that's showing up in your life in that moment. I love that. As a way to connect to yourself, and then that gives you the best chance to also connect with others.
Right.
So it's not about, David, getting rid of your running away from stress. It's about connecting to the fact that you want to run away from stress and having an intimate experience with the fact that you don't want to have an intimate experience with your stress, right? It's counterintuitive. But, I mean, people work like dogs to get rid of their addiction to pornography. And, you know, the easier path is to turn towards the thing that you're avoiding. It always comes down to that, really. Like, can you just sit with the stress? Can you sit with your wanting to avoid the stress? I think the stress isn't the issue, but your desire to avoid the stress is the thing that needs to be sat with. So just in conclusion for the entire evening, I mentioned that our theme was fear. If you connect with yourself in whatever form you are showing up, whatever voice it is that's showing up, that's Zen living. If you're fighting something, you're giving it power over you. But if you're connecting to it, if you're becoming intimate with it, then you're actually going to have less fear and you're going to have intimacy with yourself and then you have a better chance of intimacy with other people. So then I guess the homework could be is just if you want to have a journal experience, I am running from fill in the blank. I am running from. And maybe every morning list three things that you're running from. You know, right now I'm running from and just look within to see if you're running from something internally, and look externally to see if you're running from things that are external. Like today, I ran from just life, the universe, and everything and had a down day, right? It's not necessarily a bad thing. But if you just become intimate with the fact that you're running from that, that's intimacy. That's the connection that we're going for, which will limit fear. So that's our homework. Any questions about the homework? Is it clear? So this homework is just to help you have insights. So I am running from list three things. That's your homework assignment every morning, just so that you can have a moment of presence, moment of insight, and you can connect with what's true for you that day. So with that, good job, you guys. I'm putting my hands together. Thank you for engaging in consciousness practice with me. I see that there are a lot of other people on the call that kept silent. Thank you for those who sat in the hot seat. Good job, you guys. And I encourage everyone who's listening now who didn't participate, but also people who are listening to the recording afterwards to participate, because if you're in the hot seat, you get more out of this than if you're just listening. So I'll be in touch. Good job, guys.
Thank you, Kristen. I just realized I've been running from running, so I'm going for a run.
Okay.
Thanks, Kristen.
Bye-bye. Talk to you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye-bye.